Hello, 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 and welcome to the next episode of the Shane Walsh podcast. So today's episode is a solo episode before a couple of more guests are coming on, a couple of more Q&As with the clients are kind of coming up as well. So today's episode is kind of one that I've kind of covered a little bit over a few different episodes when a couple of other coaches were with me during COVID, which was Jane and Dallas. And this is something that kind of crops up an awful lot. And it is the element of emotional eating and the intent behind it. So I think it's really, really important to understand that like emotional eating is a normal thing, but it's finding out when it's serving a purpose, but it's also finding out when it's maybe numbing something else and finding out what your intent is. And this is basically what I'm going to talk about today, is the power of intent. I think if you look at when you, I'm going to talk about different phrases and stuff that you may use when you're looking at meals out, nights out, eating at home, that you may say, I'm going to rely on willpower, motivation, all these kind of different things. But this is the episode for you. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. So before I go into today's episode, I just want to give you a quick little update that there is a free resource on how to lose weight without tracking calories. It's a free ebook. It's 9 pages. It's been created by myself. And it's a really useful step-by-step approach on how to do that. MyFitnessPal is a great tool. Those apps are a great tool in the right hands. A hammer is a great tool in the right hands, but you wouldn't give it to a child. Now, counting calories is an amazing tool, but not everyone should be doing it. If it's a whole point that you don't count on weekends, maybe it's a point that you don't count when you've gone over your calories, or you don't count when maybe you've snacked a little bit more, that's a sign that MyFitnessPal isn't the right tool for you, and you probably need to learn how to do it without it. There's a reason why 85% of my one-to-one clients, whose photos you can see up on my social media and the transformations that they've had from mental health, relationship with food, the transformation photos that they have, that's because they've learned how to eat for themselves. So this could be the most important ebook that you've ever downloaded. So if you're looking for a free resource, click on the link in the show notes, download your free copy, and I hope that you enjoy it. So one of the big things that a lot of people can struggle with is this element of food guilt. It can be that maybe it's something that you can struggle with. And I want to start off by saying that something really, really, really obvious to you right now. And you might be aware of it, but you might not be aware of it. And the big statement is that humans are emotional creatures. We have this complex organ inside our head, aka a brain, which is really, really hardwired to feel a wide range of complex and intense, and more often than not, for a lot of people, unfortunately, can be uncomfortable emotions. And it all depends on what thoughts are traveling through that brain. And many of these emotions and the behaviors we engage in as a reaction to those emotions are part of our innate survival mechanisms. So you may have heard this fight or flight response on various different podcasts and various different articles and stuff, or you may not have. So for those who haven't heard of fight or flight response, our brains are hardwired to protect ourselves. So number one goal is that when we feel uneasy, our brain goes into overdrive and goes into safety mode. And it goes into that, we have two options, go and fight it or we go and run away from it. It's kind of like when we have that saber-toothed tiger back in the Stone Age chasing us after all the time. We can either fight it or we can run away from it. It's the exact same thing what happens when we get these uncomfortable emotions. And unfortunately, there's a massive, massive disconnect with the way people are feeling, and there's a massive, massive disconnect between them and food right now. If you think about it, food has been the one thing that's been constant in our life. People will love us and leave us, but food has always been there. If you think about what happens at the beginning when you're born, when you cry or when you get emotional, your feedback loop is created by getting milk or getting a warm comfort from milk or whatever it may be. So that reinforcement of that food will give you comfort is created back then. And then if some other element of trauma or grief comes along, what happens is that we look for that more positive reinforcement to almost numb or turn off that uncomfortable feeling for ourselves. But if we didn't have these survival mechanisms, we wouldn't be human. And pretty much everything that we actually do is driven by some emotion on a daily basis. So why do we actually think eating without emotion is even possible or even desirable? And emotional eating gets a fairly bad rep. But what's the alternative? Is the alternative emotionless eating? But that just sounds grim and not fun in any way. So we need to look at realistically why maybe emotional eating isn't as negative as you're thinking, or why emotional eating isn't bad for you. Eating is a perfectly acceptable way to deal and cope with intense or uncomfortable emotions. So you could be thinking, right, feeling frustrated about something that didn't go your way. Maybe you're stressed from maybe a job interview. You're maybe having a big bowl of ice cream that actually might make you feel better. Maybe you're feeling lonely having moved town or city. Maybe you spent an evening baking a family recipe for a lasagna, or and you feel that kind of makes you feel comforted or connected. Or maybe you're feeling really, really stressed after a really, really hectic week at work, and you open a bag of crisps or a bar of chocolate and you try to decompress on the couch in front of the TV. Now, an awful lot of these things are probably resonating with you right now. And these are all perfectly acceptable ways that we choose to soothe the emotions with food. But the big key word here is choice. When you are making an intentional decision to soothe with food, then there's actually a chance it'll help to make you feel better. But by bringing some intentionality to your actual emotional eating, you're much more likely to save you your food and the experience of eating it. But when emotional eating is impulsive and reactive, and it's coming from a place of restriction and mass destruction, you're more likely to eat in a way that's very, very disconnected and make you feel worse after. You start berating yourself, and that almost perpetuates that cycle and makes you do it more. While emotional eating isn't necessarily bad for you, it does become a problem when it's your only way to cope with things. So if it's your only reward system in the evenings for getting through a tough day, if it's your only way to soothe yourself because you've had a stressful day, if it's your only way to use food or alcohol to reward yourself, then that becomes a little bit of a different situation. Every now and then it will happen, and that's okay. But you don't need me to tell you that's okay. But when people are trying to reduce their emotional eating, there can come a little bit of a level of arrogance with it. And what I mean by that is people think when they're trying to lose weight that they're never going to emotionally eat. Humans are emotional creatures, like I said at the very beginning. So there's always going to be this emotional element to things, an attachment to things. So thinking that you're just going to disrupt that pattern and never do it again comes with a level of arrogance that people don't really realize. It's not that you're never going to overeat again or never going to emotionally eat again. The key to successful fat loss and key to successful relationship with food is realizing that when it happens, that you know how to reset and why it happened. The difficulty happens when emotionally eating becomes that default. It becomes a trap for you. That's why learning other coping mechanisms or interrupting that pattern is so, so powerful. It gives you the power back. And one of the big things that I had Elliot Reich on is one of the creators of intuitive eating and the intuitive eating movement. And the eighth principle of that is to cope with emotions without food. And one of the things that I like to think of it as is with or without food. And I think it's really, really important to, it's really, really important to kind of have a self-care toolbox and understand why you do things. So how do we actually eat emotionally in a really, really positive way? So we need to look at it from a point of view of, instead of looking at intuitive eating as a no emotional eating diet or losing weight as a non-emotional eating diet, you need to consider situations where food actually makes you feel better. So a few examples of positive emotional experiences and eating experiences I've had with clients recently, and these have been shared with permission, ordering a takeaway and watching a movie after a really exhausting week, going out for food or a drink after a fight with the partner, ordering a pizza while studying, baking cookies when bored, and eating a frozen meal on the couch or in bed when feeling tapped out. Now, remember, food is one way to cope with the actual emotions. And in some situations, it might be the only way and the only coping tool that you have available in your self-care toolkit right now. Look, there are more harmful elements to it as well with drugs and alcohol. But food and alcohol can be the ones that people can use to self-soothe and numb. But you need to look at why you're doing something. But that being said, like, food can soothe, but it can often distract or give you some space. It can't help you process difficult things. So we have to really, really look far beyond food as a way of coping with challenging things. So one of the things I say to clients is, if food isn't the problem, how is it going to solve it? When does that problem become worse? When does that food, say the chocolate bar, when do you stop enjoying the chocolate bar? But most people don't know the answer. They don't understand how they are actually feeling. So there's an emotional disconnect, and there's another disconnect between them and food. So we need to look about learning new coping mechanisms, learning new skills, or going to therapy. And if you struggle with emotional eating, it's important that you learn how to eat according to what's important to you and your values. And it's coming back to that statement of the difference between good or bad emotional eating is the word choice. We are in control of our choice. We are in control of what we do next. If someone has an eating disorder, it's quite different. They almost have an outer body experience and they don't know what they're doing. That is different. If someone is emotionally eating or has a disordered eating pattern, then the intent at the beginning is saying, well, I'm going to be good today. Or they say, I might do this. I plan to do this. And there's some wordings can say, rather than actually the intent is, I might do it. There's no desire to actually do it. There's no commitment. There's no belief behind it because we're going on past experiences. We're going on past developments. We're going on past responses. But sometimes, whether it's responding to our actual emotions, this can actually bring in this deprivation of eating, or it can bring in deprivation of nourishment. And it also depends on the intentions we have when we sit down to eat. If you see a bowl of chocolate, or if you see a bar in front of you, like, I've had conversations with clients, it's like, well, one of the big things, if you expose yourself, not in that way, expose yourself to the food more often, you're going to want it less. It's like if I say to you right now, don't press the big red button. What are you thinking of? Pressing the big red button. But if you start off with a day of not eating anything for breakfast, really, really small lunch and nibbling on rice cakes, the intent is always going to be there in the evening of, I'm going to bank my calories for the whole day so I try to survive on willpower and lack of energy. And then no wonder we overeat in the evening. The reality is your phone is getting treated better than you right now. It's getting charged. It's getting energy pumped into it each night. But we're treating our phone and our cars better than ourselves right now. And that whole thing of skipping meals, it doesn't really work if you're trying to improve your relationship with food. That's why the basic principle is 3 meals, 2 or 3 snacks a day. And then people will kind of freak out and say in their heads, because they don't trust themselves, because they haven't learned to trust themselves, of, oh, that's going to, what about my calories? Like, well, you're focusing on weight loss. You're not focusing about actually what you need. Sometimes we need to park the goal of weight loss. And that sometimes can be really difficult for clients to hear. Some people aren't ready to lose weight. Losing weight shouldn't be the only goal that people have. You can lose weight and have a crap relationship with food, but if your head is in ruins, what's the point? Like, you see transformation photos that I post up, and I don't really like posting them up. I really don't. And it's something I'm toying with at the minute of getting rid of them. But unfortunately, people see this body and they're like, oh, I want this. But the transformations that people are attached to more are the client interviews that I have with clients, because they have a story and that no amount of words or no amount of picture can put that in, because they've worked on the mental side. And often the weight that we have to lose isn't from a physical point of view. It's often a mental point of view, because it's never really about the food. Often when we say I'm being good or bad, it's a reflection of what's been taught to you, but how you see yourself when you eat it. I'm being good because I had a rice cake. I'm being bad because I had chocolate. No. No, you're not. I'm being good because I had a salad. I'm being bad because I had a pizza. No. Maybe you needed a little bit more carbohydrates in preparation for a run that you're doing. Maybe you wanted to have that takeaway in advance. Oh, the scales goes up because I had the takeaway. No. You're guessing. It may have happened, but if you drank water, the scales will go up. So that means that I don't have water anymore? And a perfect example of this experiment that I did, I weighed in myself for the first time in a very, very long time, because I was staying at my parents over Easter. I weighed in on a Saturday morning. And or on Sunday morning before the Easter eggs. And I had some Easter eggs and I weighed in on Monday morning. I was actually down weight. So does that mean that I just eat Easter eggs? Probably not. But what happens is people will see the scales go up after having eaten Easter eggs. But the intent was to eat them all, get them out of the house as soon as possible, not trusting themselves around food. But if they see that scales go up, oh, it must be the Easter eggs. So then they restrict them. But how can it be okay to have the Easter eggs if the scales went down and not okay if the scales went up? It's the same thing. It's the same food. So how can we have this responsive reaction? Because it's an emotional piece. But this whole thing of nourishing and deprivation and restriction, a lot of us, unfortunately, are addicted to this restriction around food. We look for these rules, these food rules that we have. So we need to look at the intention and the clarity of our intention around our eating. And some of the questions that I sometimes ask clients are, how aware are we of the reasons why you choose to eat a particular food at a particular time? So one example of this question would be, well, I'm craving chocolate. I'm like, no, you're not. Now, I'm being awkward right now with the way I'm doing this, but this isn't the way I talk to clients. Have chocolate with your breakfast. They're like, oh, I don't really feel like chocolate for breakfast. Okay, so we're not craving it then. And then you get this bemused look or a bemused message back, or the awkward side eye mess or emoji. So we're not craving chocolate. What's happening is, if you spot where you're having the chocolate, it's when it's in the evening or when you're trying to unwind or when you're stressed in the evening because you haven't eaten enough during the day or you're trying to self-soothe. So keep a log of when you are actually eating these things, when your intent ramps up and what's triggering that intent. Is it the soothing? Is it the stress? Is it the intent at the beginning of the day of mass destruction with restriction? Or what is it? The next question is, are you actually eating in a way that aligns with a particular goal that we have, such as a health goal? People say, well, I'm eating healthy. What does that even mean? Eating healthy to me is different to you. Everyone is different. Eating healthy to me is eating regular meals, getting decent portions of protein, and getting decent amounts of vegetables in, and having an ice cream or chocolate each day. That's eating healthy to me. But Susan down the road might be that they just want to reduce that emotional eating piece. And that's okay. There are foods that are less optimal and more optimal. And one way to navigate the whole thing is, if you have a less optimal meal, like maybe a pizza or something like that, or a takeaway, make sure the next meal is optimal. If you overeat on chocolate, don't go into restriction mode and skip a load of meals because of it. The sooner you eat, the sooner you'll be back to where you want to go. And it might feel like you've lost control, but you aren't in control at the beginning, because your intent is at the beginning is to overeat. The food is in control. So you're not in control at the minute. But if you have some of it daily, that overexposure to it will allow you to become a little bit more in tune with things. So when faced with the next question is, when faced with a stressful situation, have we considered whether there may be a better way of coping or resolving these situations other than food? So what other way can you manage your stress that doesn't involve food or drink? We could talk. We could do some breathing. We could go for a walk. We could ring a friend. But then it might sound selfish that you're actually asking for help. We may not feel that we deserve the help. We may not feel that we deserve to feel loved. We may not be accepted or validated. But you're ignoring your own emotions. Imagine you were one of your kids or one of your nephews or nieces right now, and the way that you're talking to yourself and treating yourself. But you've mimicked it from somewhere. You've learned it from somewhere. So you're teaching who those around you the same thing. So how can we interrupt that pattern? So say one of the things would say alcohol, for example. Rather than say I'm never drinking again, could you, because all you're looking for is that first one or two sips. Generally that exposure to the food, that kind of dopamine release or that enjoyment of the actual food tends to go after two bites. Like if you're actually present enough with the food, have a piece of chocolate, let it sit onto your tongue, let it melt. Because most people eat with the intent of, I need to get rid of this. I need to get this out of the house. I don't know when my next meal. But chocolate's going to exist tomorrow. It's not going to stop existing tomorrow just because you eat that bar today. But if you also look at your intent, are you jumping into the car on the way home from work because you skipped all your meals and going into the shop to eat all the food again? There's your intent. But you could have said, right, well, I haven't eaten quite regularly, so I'm just going to run to the shop. I'm going to pick up a sandwich because I know I've got a 2-hour drive home or an hour drive home, or I'm going to pick up a protein bar and a glass and some water, or I'm going to pick up some fruit. So look at your intent. Are you acting like the person you want to become? The next question is, to what extent do we really savor or enjoy the food we're eating when we choose to eat at the moment? Most people don't eat with enjoyment. They're too distracted. They're watching TV, they're watching Netflix, they're scrolling on their phone. There's a massive, massive disconnect between people and their food. So they don't know when they lose that enjoyment. And that thing I spoke about a second ago, I've tried the test. Maybe test is the wrong word, but try an experiment. Put one square of chocolate onto your tongue. Let it melt. Don't bite it. Let it melt. See how you feel. What's the next one going to do for you that the last one didn't? Try another one. You'll probably find after the second one, you don't really want the third one, but you'll have a third one anyway. And then you're like, do you know what? I don't need the third one. But you're savoring the moment. You're savoring the food, not eating to like it's going out of fashion. The next question is, as a whole, does your experience of eating delight you or leave you with a lingering sense that something's not quite right? What void is it filling? So we need to look at those questions. And we need to look at what actually moves us towards eating emotionally. It can be known as stress eating and can be known as comfort eating. And if we kind of go through that list of questions that I spoke about, you'll probably realize that the intent of your eating tends to be probably about self-soothing rather than enjoyment. And this happens to all of us at some stage. And it's not about willpower. It's not about being weak. It's not about being stronger. It's not because I'm a better person, or he's a better person, or she's a better person, or they are a better person. And there's three detriments for emotional eating. And this is from a research paper from Dr. Van Strijn. And the first detriment is poor interoceptive awareness. So what this means and what this looks like is the person has difficulty distinguishing feelings of hunger and satiety, which can often lead to massive difficulties with determining whether one has eaten too little or too much. And this can be down to dietary factors such as regularly eating foods that are high in processed food or high in sugar. And this can exacerbate hunger because of the rapid increase. So if you think about it, if you have something, you haven't eaten all day and you come home and you go to the press and you eat maybe a load of biscuits or you go for a load of jellies, they're not going to fill you. So you're loading up on higher calorie objects. So your calories can go up really, really quickly. because they're not satiating, you're eating like it's going out of fashion. You don't know when to check in and say, right, am I hungry or am I full? The next one is poor emotional regulation strategies. Think about it this way. A person becomes over-reliant on a particular coping mechanism. And in this case, for a lot of people listening to this, will be food. And to deal with this stressful emotion and stressful situation, it can mean that emotional eating becomes the result of the inappropriate coping mechanism. And sometimes what can happen is people will say, well, it's just a habit. I'm kind of like, no, but for a habit to form, you must understand why you do things. Because a habit, the only way a habit forms is if humans see a benefit. And sometimes that whole habit thing of, oh, it's a habit, that can become a self-professing story. Ah, it's just a habit, I'm just going to do it anyway. But that becomes a toxic justification to your action if you're continuously doing it as the only thing you're doing. And that can lead to that reoccurring, occurring all the time. And this is why we can become reliant on emotional eating. And then there's another element of it with the last detriment is the disruption of the HPA. The disruption of the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal gland on axis. The HPA. So the HPA axis is responsible for regulating our appetite, right? So under normal circumstances, the stress would be a loss of appetite. So for me, when I get stressed, I tend to undereat. But due to various different factors, trauma, abuse, underlying health conditions, this can be reversed for some people. So that's when you are eating or you're getting exams, you have stress at work, hunger can go up and your brain will go, I crave sugar. But are you craving sugar or are you craving food? Like, the big question to ask yourself is, what do I need? And we may not know that, but are we hungry enough for fruit? That's a really solid question to ask yourself. It's a really, really solid question to ask yourself. Are you craving food? Are you craving sugar? Well, go and have a teaspoon of sugar and tell me you're craving sugar. Or are we craving that comfort that the food gives us? And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that. And following on from this, we can ask ourselves three following questions. What might be causing your urge to eat at a particular time? Is it because of what or how you might be used to eating? What difficult or stressful situations are you currently experiencing that may be better served by something other than food? Another thing is, when you think of food, what memories are usually associated with it? Was there a certain negative or positive response to it or experience in your life? So I know myself, when I smell brown bread, it reminds me of my granny's kitchen. But when I see corned beef, I gag because I got given gone off for lunch when I was like 7 or 8 and I puked everywhere. So we have these positive and negative experiences. And then aside from providing actual nutrition or sustenance to you, in what ways has food been present in your life growing up? Did you have abundance or did you have a scarcity? So sometimes, and this is one of the big things that people can maybe not know or forget, that when people are struggling with weight, a massive thing that can happen is level of financial security can have a massive impact. Because you may not know when your next meal is going to be, so it's about getting as much as you can in. It might be going for higher palatable foods, which are often higher calories. Higher palatable generally means tasty or tastier. And if we don't know where our next meal is coming from and we're going for cheaper options that are quick and easy all the time and they're higher in calories, that can be why people who may not come from higher socioeconomic backgrounds can struggle with weight and obesity is higher in them. And that's not a place of me from privilege. That's from me stating the studies that are out there. So if we know all those questions, if we know all those questions that we've just spoken about, how do we actually find our eating or find what works for us with eating? If you think about it, like, eating is fun. Eating is fun. It plays a really, really big vital role in maintaining our regular body functions. Like if you don't get enough food into you, you can turn off your menstrual cycle. So if you're trying to conceive, it can go into safety mode. There's a region in your brain called the hypothalamus. And it turn the body's that brain goes into safety mode and turns off any unnecessary energy that the body needs that in order to protect the organs. So the reproductive organs actually, when it's going through the menstrual cycle, will use calories. That's why heading towards your cycle, you may have experience more cravings, more hunger, more irritability, those kind of things. Because your body and your metabolism is actually speeding up. So you may need a little bit more energy. But if your body's not getting enough nutrients or energy into it, if you're over-exercising or restricting or have an eating disorder, your brain will kick into the overdrive and turn off the safety mechanism and turn off your menstrual cycle in order to protect the actual organs themselves. So how do we actually eat? And it all depends on kind of the answers to the questions that I asked earlier on. But one of the big things is acceptance. And this is something that doesn't come easy for an awful lot of people because we go into a shame or guilt spiral after we overeat. But we need to understand why. Who taught us that? Why is that food bad? What's going to happen? Oh, it's going to make me gain weight. But there's a difference between weight and fat. The scales will only measure your weight or your relationship with gravity. It will not measure your fat gain. It's kind of like using your bank balance to tell you how good are you in bed. Using your bank balance to tell you how good you are in bed. That's essentially what using the scales is like for fat loss. It's a pretty fucking useless tool. That's why pictures, non-scale victories, measurements, all that kind of stuff is more important. But none of that's important if you are overeating and numbing and soothing as the only or the main tool to deal with your emotions. So what this means is less judgment, which often leads to guilt and shame and often kindness. Because if you're talking, saying you're a dick or you're useless or you're worthless or you've low willpower, why can't I cop the fuck on? Those kind of things that I've heard from clients on a regular basis at the beginning. That's going to make the cycle harder to break. That perpetuates it. The next thing is awareness. And this means turning into or tuning into that emotional nature of actually eating and noticing what kind of emotions emerge alongside the desire to eat. So when you're stressed and you're sitting there, what are you doing? What's happening? Is it the first time you've sat down all day? Have you eaten enough all day? Maybe you need to eat a proper regular meal rather than just like, is your intent to go to the press? Oh, I'm bored. But how does food solve boredom? We all have boredom eat. But if it's your only tool to deal with boredom, it's a sign that you're probably not fulfilling the life that you want. I'm getting overwhelmed. Overwhelm is essentially doing an awful lot of actions that are not aligned with your values. And most people don't know how to eat according to their values. It's a taught skill and it's really tough. And I think the big thing when it comes to reducing emotional eating, there will be times you overeat and it's hard. It's not easy. And then the next thing is we avoid reacting really, really impulsively. And this means that when those difficult emotions happen and those negative emotions emerge after we've overeaten, we take a pause. We check in on ourselves rather than reacting immediately. So when you get, think of it this way, when you get a flat tire, what do? You try to fix it, or you ring someone to fix it. You don't go smashing the windows, slashing all the rest of the tires. But why is it with food that you've had a few biscuits that maybe you didn't need, or maybe you did need, and we tend to go into the packet? But what are you doing? What's it soothing? What's its purpose? Are you aware of what's going on, or are you just eating them like they're going out of fashion? And this, by knowing your acceptance, by having the awareness and avoiding that reactive impulsivity that you're probably doing right now, you'll be able to understand yourself a lot more. The biggest thing in the evenings, if you're eating with the TV on, with your phone in your hand, doing something else, you're not going to be able to reduce the emotional eating as much as you potentially want to or need to. But if you're sitting at the table, no distractions, and actually checking in yourself, right, am I full? Am I hungry enough for fruit? If you're restricting and not allowing yourself to have chocolate or whatever your food is on a daily basis, no wonder it's up on a pedestal. And then we say the words like treat. You're not a dog. Stop treating yourself like a dog. Stop rewarding yourself all the time for sitting down or for wagging your tail or doing a headstand. You're not a dog. Treat yourself the way you would treat your kids. If you looked at a picture of you right now as a kid, would you be happy with how you're actually treating yourself and talking to yourself right now? My guess is, fuck no. So when are we going to learn that the soothing thing, if it's the only way, when are we going to learn and try to remedy it? It's hard. It's uncomfortable. There's uncomfortable feelings. And when there's trauma and grief attached to it, we may not feel worthy of actually achieving this. We may not feel worthy of treating our body and understanding why we do things. But when people think of weight loss, it's like, oh, here's a calorie guideline. Yeah, that will work to a point. But that's like putting the doors and the windows and the walls up first into a house without having looked at the foundations. Think of it this way. When people are trying to lose weight, what's the first thing people will do on the 1st of January? They'll try to increase their exercise. But that's probably about 3% of the equation. They're missing the other 97% of the behaviors, why we do things, the habits. They're missing the important pieces, but they're focusing on the 3%. Why not focus on the 97%? It's not easy. But if you're looking for long-lasting results and changes and behaviors, and this is something that one of my clients said to me on a check-in, is like, the difference between you and other coaches that are out there is you address these with us. You don't shame us. You don't guilt us. It's from a place of acceptance. You challenge us, but you ask questions that are open-ended with judgment. Without judgment, should I say. Now, you can probably try this to yourself, but it's going to be harder. Because it's something that you need to learn if you're trying to unwire 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 40 years of emotional eating. And numbing and soothing. And you don't know why you're doing things. I just do it. It's just a habit. That's surface level. That's not going to get you to where you want it. You need to understand why you do things. The habit feedback loop. So according to James Clear, he talks the 4 stages of a habit. And they form an endless cycle that is running every moment you are alive. And we're continually scanning the environment. We're predicting what will happen next. We're trying to figure out responses and learning from the results. So the 4 stages of a habit are cue, craving, response, reward over time. So you need to interrupt the pattern. So if you're looking to reduce emotional eating in the evenings, as that's when most people will pick, what's the cue? Uncertainty, fear, tiredness, stress. What's the craving? Comfort. Okay. Response. Normally it's food. So how can we treat that comfort that doesn't involve food or alcohol? How can you get that comfort from somewhere else? Is it from a warm cup of tea? Is it from a partner giving you a hug? Is it from a hug from your kids? Is it journaling? Is it going for a walk? Often it's not the food that's the issue. It's our lack of awareness and lack of coping mechanisms. So if you want to improve on those, drop me a message, drop me a DM, and we'll work together one-to-one. If you want to get away from tracking, click on the link in the show notes and get away from tracking. But that also needs coaching. If you're fed up of not feeling in control around food, let's jump on a call. As always, if you've enjoyed this episode, please do tag us up on your story. Thank you for listening, and thank you all so much for your support throughout the 340 odd episodes. Thank you so much for listening.